This weekend starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
How to speak the new language of mask. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
As lockdown restrictions are dialed back and more people venture out, we're having a hard time understanding each other through face coverings. We'll have examples.
Big food companies have noticed a new trend. Snacking during stay-at-home orders has brought back some bad eating habits.
On the investing front, it seems safe havens offering attractive yields have disappeared. We'll examine other options for your money.
And the dangers as the NFL tries to return from coronavirus shutdown.
Well, certainly they want to make sure that hygiene is in place, follow all the sort of the regular steps that all of us are. They are going to undergo daily screenings and have prepackaged meals instead of buffets, which are common with a lot of teams.
Rachel Bachman at the Wall Street Journal looks at the many different challenges as football takes a run at the 2020 season. Are we entering a time where you'll have to sign a COVID waiver everywhere you go, like whenever you go to the gym, or book a table at a restaurant, or enter a salon or a hotel? We're joined by liability attorney Richard Bell, author of a book called Why Insurance Companies Hate When You Hire a Lawyer. Richard, set this up.
Oh, well, this is a very hot issue right now. So here's what it is. So let's start with the regular consumer. We can move on to President Trump in a minute. But for the everyday consumer, you go into a barbershop, a restaurant, a gym, a store. They may be presenting you with what's called a waiver of liability. And it will be this form, and it will essentially state on the form that we're not responsible if we're negligent and you get COVID. That's the basic language of it. So the big question becomes, does that piece of paper mean anything and should you sign it, right?
Mm. So just because you sign a waiver, right, I think we might have learned in, Lawyer 101, doesn't mean you can't sue.
That's it. Oh, excellent. Excellent, Gordon. That is great advice you're giving consumers because it's true. It's absolutely true because, okay, while waiver law varies from state to state, is some basic principles that almost all the states have. And that is, okay, you sign a waiver. What does it mean? Well, number one, depending on the state, it may be interpreted more in favor of the consumer than the business. Number two, they have to have very clear language. And in the case of COVID, they're going to have to state very specifically what they're talking about, that you didn't contract COVID here or something of that nature. And it's going to have to be in a certain font. And most importantly, and this is almost across the board, I can't speak for 50 states, but I can certainly say that most, say that while a business can contract itself maybe out of ordinary negligence, it cannot contract itself out of gross negligence.
Wow. Okay. So
that is almost across the board.
Subject to interpretation, I guess, right?
Yeah. So basically, in very simple language, so ordinary negligence is a failure to use ordinary care. And gross negligence is basically you're failing to use any slight care, and you're completely disregarding the rights and safeties of others. So let me give you a couple examples that might come up in the COVID situation. So ordinary negligence. Maybe that's you're not properly monitoring the social distancing of your customers, or you're not properly monitoring the times that you disinfect the place. Let's step it up. What might gross negligence be? Like you said, it's always subject to interpretation by a court. So gross negligence might be you let your employees come to work with symptoms. Okay? That sounds like a next level. Or how about you're in a restaurant, you put the tables 2 feet apart. They should be 6 feet apart because we all know the guidelines right now. So that's where this issue might come up, where even though you signed something, a court may say, well, wait a second, that was gross negligence. You're not getting contracted out of that.
We're speaking with Richard Bell, liability attorney, also author of a book called Why Insurance Companies Hate When You Hire a Lawyer. And we're talking about waivers that we might see put out from businesses as customers perhaps enter their doors. The waiver just, it doesn't sound customer friendly.
Oh, Gordon, this is an excellent point. So let's stay away from the law for one second and go to the public relations part. If I show up at a restaurant or a barbershop and they present me with a waiver, the first thing I say is, what's the matter? You're not doing the right thing here. You're not a safe place to be. Why am I have to sign this? And if you are going to proceed, for some reason you really want to go to that place, A, you got to read it, and B, you have to say to them, hey, I want to inspect your place. I want to see what procedures you are following. I want to look at it. I want to see what the notices are on the wall. And if you're not satisfied, walk out.
Wow. I guess that would be your right. You walk into the restaurant, they hand you a waiver. Before you sign it, do you say, I want a full tour?
Sure. Absolutely.
Why not, I guess?
You're a customer. Consumers have all the power. We always forget that. I do consumer law, and consumers forget you have the power because you have the power to purchase.
So what's going to happen here, Richard? Are we really going to see like this small mom-and-pop shops or chain restaurants handing people waivers when they walk in and then telling them thanks but no thanks if they won't sign it?
I think that you are going to see some businesses. I don't know how prevalent it's going to be, but most likely some larger businesses and maybe even smaller ones. They go to the business attorney, get this thing drafted, and present you with it. But you know what? Here's the big catch here. I think we're creating an issue that may never be there, because for most businesses, in order to prove your case, you'd have to not just prove that they were grossly negligent or negligent, depending on the situation, but you'd have to prove that you got the COVID from their establishment. And that is such a high bar.
Yeah. Thanks, Richard. Richard Bell. Again, the book is called Why Insurance Companies Hate When You Hire a Lawyer. You can find him at richardcbellesq.com. 13 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Thanks for joining us. During stay-home orders, kids have had to deal with a lot of stuff they weren't prepared for regarding school, right? A significant loss of weeks of education, perhaps some damaged GPAs, and no assurance they'll be going back in the fall. However, some schools were able to pivot because they already had implemented remote programs that were mature, easily implemented, and designed by teachers for teachers. Rob Enderle, founder of the tech firm The Enderle Group, has a look at a program they've used called LAN School. Rob, remote learning just wasn't cutting it.
Well, it kind of sucked. I mean, you saw a lot of schools try it and then give up and say it's not working and then close the school year early. Kids aren't sure if they've got grades or not. I guess a lot of them aren't going to have grades. Colleges are then dealing with, okay, how do you do with grade point averages when you bring kids in if their senior year they didn't have a grade period. It's created a mess. The kids didn't get the education. They don't have the credentials they need. And unfortunately, I think a lot of the kids this year and next are going to be significantly disadvantaged because of that. The schools just weren't set up to teach remotely. The classrooms were already over capacity. The teachers were not particularly well trained in technology because they didn't have to be. And then the schools tried to do a pivot without a lot of knowledge about either the technology or the training for the teachers. And they discovered that when you don't have the knowledge or the technology, or the or the and the students aren't ready either, things are going to go badly. Yeah. Pretty much anybody probably could have said that. So that like throwing somebody in a car and say drive without ever having driven a car before, it's probably going to end up on a wall. And the whole program's ended up on the wall.
All right, so Zoom, as you mentioned, is lovely, not really designed for educational purposes. But you referenced this land school.
Yeah, I ran into this with Lenovo. So what schools initially tried to do is they tried to take tools that really weren't designed for education and deploy them for education. And, of course, that's part of the problem. And then they discovered some of the security shortfalls in the products because you recognize that kids being kids don't necessarily fall within the rules. I mean, things that you and I wouldn't do on a meeting because we know we'd get fired, kids will do just because, hey, it's fun and they've never been fired before or expelled or anything else. So then, of course, once that happens, then everybody learns the lesson all at once. And so what Lenovo had done earlier this decade, or actually last decade now, was they purchased a company called Land School, and they were using that company to help schools that had either they were in a geographically inconvenient area for a lot of their students, you know, out in some rural area where it was just inconvenient for a lot of the kids to come to school. So they were learning remotely, or where they had issues where the students were ill and couldn't travel into school and take the classes. And so the program Land School was developed specifically to teach children remotely, and so they had knowledge. The teachers were that used the tool were trained in it. The students, of course, that were using the tool provided feedback, and into where it was working or it wasn't. So it evolved over a period of years, and so it has gotten better. And the end result was is those schools that had these programs in place were able to pivot remotely, and in general, it all worked. Because they had something that did work. They had people trained on how to make it work, and it covered not just the technology, but it covered how to secure the technology, how to actually teach a class that is remote. It also provided teachers with control over the student's hardware. So while you're teaching the student doesn't have another web page open and he's browsing things he or she shouldn't be browsing. The teacher can see all of that and physically stop that behavior and actually turn the machine off if they have to give the student a timeout if they're misbehaving. Mm. It's that kind of control that you don't typically get, very granular control that you don't get with a typical video conferencing program because you don't really worry about that. I mean, you might have a distracted audience, but your executive is probably not going to be happy if you say, hey, it looks like you're doing email. I'm going to shut you off. That's not going to work with an executive, but with students it does.
Yeah.
And with students you kind of have to have that control because kids, as we know, do act out.
We're speaking with Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. He's written a piece about remote education for technewsworld.com. I know a lot of the teachers complain about remote learning because they can't see or read the kids physically. They can't read the faces that they're making or you know, slumping shoulders to indicate that they might not be understanding something. Land School, I presume, can address that.
Yeah, it's bidirectional and it's secure, so you don't get the sense of people coming in and doing Zoom bombing. And the interesting comment that the teachers that were interviewed said was that it allowed them to be teachers again. It was very easy to use. What a lot of the technology companies didn't initially get, and don't get me wrong, they didn't really have to get it because it wasn't their audience. But one of the big problems was the teachers have been using relatively old technology for a long period of time.
All right, thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle, founder of the tech firm The Enderle Group. It's 22 minutes after the hour on This Weekend.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
For the ones we trust to always be there. For the ones caring for others. For the ones who keep things going, no matter where they are. In extraordinary times, extraordinary people step up, like the ones standing guard and standing on the front lines. And the ones who are staying apart while still working together. With your efforts, we will get through this. We're grateful for all you do. Visit Grainger.com for resources that can help as you create your recovery plan. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for being with us. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, believes football teams will need to live inside a closed-off community to play the 2020 season. The NFL's chief medical officer says he doesn't think living in a type of bubble is either practical or appropriate. Football is the country's most popular sport, and it also faces the most complexities for a return to action. More from this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
Football players are some of the best athletes in the world. They also could face outside risk as they return to the field amid this pandemic. Rachel Bachman of the Wall Street Journal has a story. Rachel, why would football players face a disproportionate risk?
Well, there's a number of reasons. Of course, there's the nature of the sport itself. It's very high contact, high touch. The rosters are big, so any potential outbreak could spread very quickly to 100 players. And a dozen or more coaches in some cases. And also at the college and pro level in particular, there's a high percentage of African-American players. About half of players in major college football are African-American, and more than half of NFL players. And African-Americans, as we know, are at higher risk of serious complications if they get COVID-19, if they actually are infected. So there's a number of sort of layering risks that make football particularly problematic during this pandemic.
Rachel, what are some of the early guidelines that the NFL has put in place to protect players?
Well, certainly they want to make sure that hygiene is in place follow all the sort of the regular steps that all of us are. They are going to undergo daily screenings and have prepackaged meals instead of buffets, which are common with a lot of teams. So those are some of the preliminary steps, but it's likely that there'll be a lot more involved steps as the season approaches.
We're speaking with Rachel Bachman of the Wall Street Journal about football maybe coming back. Rachel, on the NFL and collegiate level, obviously these teams spend enormous amounts of time together. What about eating and locker rooms and weight rooms? How does that all pose different kinds of problems?
Yeah, I think, generally speaking, outdoor activities are safer than indoor activities, scientists are saying. So actually playing football outdoors might be slightly less risky, especially if you're, a receiver or somebody who's playing apart from other players, than, for instance, being in a crowded meeting room. And, in college football, it's very common for the entire team to meet in an auditorium and be sitting, elbow to elbow. And we're not going to see that this season. If we do, we're going to see a lot more infections. So, colleges are going to have to either hold meetings outside or hold meetings in larger auditoriums so players can space out. I mean, they're just going to have to make a lot of accommodations to try to minimize infections as much as possible.
Are there any protocols in place for shutting down the season, shutting down certain players, shutting down for a certain amount of time, depending on positive tests?
Well, it's too early to tell, for instance, in the NFL. In college football, there's an interesting dynamic in that the NCAA really is not weighing in on sort of policing how schools handle coronavirus protocols. And so I don't think you'll see from the NCAA a command to shut down the season. College football really is ruled at the conference level. And so you might see conference commissioners say, hey, we're seeing too many infections. But more likely, this is going to be on a school-by-school basis. How teams behave, what happens if there are a lot of positive tests. And certainly opponents are eventually going to weigh in. If teams get to the season and, for instance, there are a lot of cases recently reported on an opposing team, it's possible that that team, it's going to face won't want to play it. So there are all kinds of questions that this infection raises.
This weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Wall Street Journal sports reporter Rachel Bachman. 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. I loved cereal growing up and still do. except when I started reading the nutrition labels. That's when I realized it was everything I was trying to avoid, like carbs, sugar, and the other junk that's bad for me, all in one bowl. It took the fun out of what was supposed to be the most important meal of the day. Then I tried Magic Spoons healthy cereals. They're keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. Plus, there's zero sugar, 12 grams of protein, and only 3 net grams of carbs per serving. And on top of that, their cereals taste amazing. The frosted flavor is my favorite, but they all taste too good to be true. Try it yourself. Go to magicspoon.com/morning to grab a variety pack. Be sure to use our promo code MORNING at checkout to get free shipping. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. That's magicspoon.com/morning and use the code MORNING at checkout for free shipping. magicspoon.com/morning. Thanks for spending part of your Father's Day weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Coming up this half hour, whatever happened to safe yields? Also, face masks leading to verbal misunderstandings. And funny Father's Day quotes from comedians. We'll have those in about 20 minutes. Well, at least one big food company has done some investigating about our eating habits during the lockdowns. What it found? We may think that we turned a corner on our eating habits with all that sourdough baking we did, but big food isn't about to let us off its hook that easily. Michael Moss, author of a book called Salt, Sugar, Fat, says, for starters, the pandemic revealed that sheltering in our homes, where many of us will continue to work, turns our kitchens into one huge vending machine. Michael, what are you hearing?
I got this idea to sort of look at this from my friends who are kind of split. I mean, some of them were binging, you know, under the stress that we all been on, you know, toward the traditional sort of processed snack foods, cookies, crackers, etc. But some of my friends were trying to do something else and cook from scratch and a lot of sourdough baking. And so I was wondering what the companies who make processed food were thinking about all this and what their plans were for going forward, keeping us liking and buying their products.
All right. And the companies like Mondelez, for example, right, have said, yeah, that's what we're seeing. There's a huge spike for things like Oreos and crackers.
They were pretty excited. I mean, they had a conference call with their investors for the first quarter earnings back in April. And the news to them was terrific. And basically, the pandemic had turned our kitchens into giant vending machines. So we went out and stocked up, fearing that the supermarkets were going to close. But here is the really exciting news for Mondelez and the other food giants, is that we ate through all that food. And when the stores didn't close, we went back and bought more. Mm. And sales of snack foods soared tremendously. Mondelez, you know, cookies and biscuits in the first few days were up nearly 30%. It's sort of on across the board in the supermarket. Convenience foods went really big.
Well, we're speaking with Michael Moss. He's author of a book called Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us. And we're talking about bad habits possibly returning during the pandemic. He's written a piece about it in the New York Times. So what happened to that trend? You referenced some of your friends and mine as well. No restaurants, so we're going to cook from home and experiment, and things seem to be going along swimmingly.
They did, and they still are kind of in those places that are still locked down. But here's the thing. I mean, we've had years and years of developing this habit, a very fondness for having other people cook for us, whether it's a fast food restaurant or a fancy restaurant, or in many cases, the grocery stores, which are making foods that are basically you do is heat up. They do the cooking for you. So I think our natural tendency is to go back to that. And it's going to take some really concerted effort on our part to resist that, if in fact we want to keep baking and cooking and cooking food from scratch, which most people say is probably healthier for us because it includes more fruits and vegetables and fiber and the things that make us healthy.
Yeah. What are some of the generational trends that have been spotted here?
Oh, yeah. So really interesting. I mean, the years up to the pandemic, ironically, it was young adults who were giving the food companies the hardest time. They were starting to shy away from the more heavily processed foods. And guess who, when the pandemic hit, were the first ones to rush out and start binging on cookies and crackers and kind of the more junkiest stuff in the store.
Wow.
It was, you know, people 18 to 29.
Thanks, Michael. Michael Moss. Again, the book is called Salt, Sugar, Fat. It is 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Even in tough times, you want to try to look your best, even if it's just from the waist up for those video chats. So when it comes to your facial hair, Harry's has you covered, bringing you incredibly high-quality blades at factory direct prices, just $2 per blade. Now, when it comes to my facial hair, I'm typically a goatee guy, but lately I've been using these times of home quarantine to experiment with a full beard. This has allowed the precision trimmer blade on my Harry's razor to take center stage. I use it to make sure my new beard is looking its best. Now you can keep your face looking smooth too, or your beard looking clean, with a Harry's trial set delivered right to your doorstep. Just go to harrys.com/Gordon to order yours. And get this, to help support those who need it the most right now, Harry's is donating $1 million worth of shaving supplies to hospitals across the U.S. so you can feel good about looking good. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/Gordon. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/Gordon to start shaving better today. Glad you could be with us. Welcome into Father's Day weekend. They've long been endangered, but 2020 may mark their demise. After 4 decades of falling interest rates, it seems safe investments offering attractive yields have finally disappeared. In the years ahead, the yield-obsessed will no doubt turn to riskier fare, and many will end up badly burned. Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com, says it's time to say goodbye to the notion of a safe yield and confront its many implications. Now what? Jonathan, what should we keep in mind?
So if you think back over the past 4 decades, Gordon, the most fundamental trend in the financial markets has been declining interest rates. You know, we went from double-digit yields in the early 1980s to well below 1% on the 10-year Treasury note today. That is a fundamental change, and there is no sign that this is going to reverse anytime soon. And what that means is that, you know, when you go to buy bonds, these days you're going to get a return that after inflation and after taxes could well be negative, and if it's positive, it's barely positive. And that changes the game in so many different ways. Because bond yields are so low, we really need to rethink our entire financial life.
Yeah. I mean, they're not even in the kind of general ballpark these days as a decent option. So why has this happened?
Why has this happened? It's a great question. Partly, I think it's because, you know, we live in a world where there is all this capital sloshing around the globe trying to find opportunities to make money, and not only has a lot of this money poured into the stock market, but it's also poured into the bond market. With, you know, more capital pursuing fewer investment opportunities, we're ending up with lower and lower expected returns on assets, and the big hit for right now has been on the bond side. Bond investors are really looking at grim returns, and that means they need to rethink what they're doing.
All right. So to rethink what you're doing then, what are some options if you're looking for safety?
So one of the ideas that I mentioned is an idea from 1989 from the late, great Peter Bernstein. One of the things that Peter wrote about back in 1989 was that instead of the traditional balanced portfolio of 60% stocks and 40% bonds, perhaps people should instead own 75% stocks and 25% cash investments. What he found back in 1989 was that portfolio had not only higher returns, but its risk level was no different. And thus, potentially, in the world we're in today, where stocks do have a reasonably high expected return, bonds do not, then maybe we should up the percentage of our portfolio in stock, then compensate by taking less risk on the conservative side of our portfolio. So instead of buying those intermediate-term bonds, maybe we should just hold cash investments like money market funds and high-yield savings accounts.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. He's written a piece entitled Farewell Yield. You also say you could delay Social Security.
One of the big problems that arise out of low bond yields is it really hurts retirement investors. Suddenly, you know, if you're a retiree, you're having a big problem creating yield. And so two ways that you can recover yield in your portfolio, as it were, is one, to delay Social Security so you get a larger monthly check. And two, you might want to look into something called an immediate fixed annuity. And an immediate fixed annuity, you know, offers, even today, a decent payout. And the reason is, you know, while bond yields have come down, when you buy an immediate fixed annuity, what you're essentially betting is that you live a long life. And because life expectancies haven't changed in the way that bond yields have, insurance companies continue to pay reasonably good payouts on those immediate fixed annuities. So for retirees who are anxious for more income, one, consider delaying Social Security to get a larger monthly benefit, and two, consider an immediate fixed annuity.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com. With the recent global pandemic, the way we work together seemingly changed overnight. And if there's one thing we've learned, it's that having access to the right resources is essential for adapting your business. But when it comes to finding the right talent, the process can be time-consuming, frustrating, and expensive. Whether you're launching your first business, scaling your current business, or in need of extra support to complete a project, find the quality talent you need instantly with Fiverr. With Fiverr's online marketplace, your business is connected to freelancers offering hundreds of digital services, including graphic design, copywriting, web programming, and more. And it's so easy. You can customize your search by service, deadline, price, seller reviews, and more. Plus, no more guessing games. You'll know exactly what you're paying for up front. No negotiating needed. Check out Fiverr.com and receive 10% off your first order using my code Gordon. All the digital services you need in one place at Fiverr.com, code Gordon. Fiverr.com, code Gordon. Glad you could be with us. We've entered a new period of miscommunication thanks to our coronavirus masks. Count the ability to understand each other during routine personal interactions as yet another challenge of the pandemic. The masks, while an important safeguard against the spread of the virus, not only muffle sounds, but also cover up much of the facial expression people normally use to interpret meaning. It's a story by Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Needleman. Sarah, give an example.
Well, for example, the gentleman I spoke to at a pizza restaurant, he heard a colleague asked for potatoes, and he said, "We don't have potatoes here," but she was saying tomatoes. I even got some great mail from readers. The woman said she ordered, asked for mushrooms, and the clerk behind the counter directed her to the restroom. A gentleman also emailed me and said that he said something about having car problems, and a woman said, "Oh, should I call 911? She thought he had heart problems.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a lot like, as one person put it, who's on first sort of Abbott and Costello-like routine. You just don't quite understand what's going on, and it could be quite hilarious at times. And it can be frustrating if you're just trying to get something done and you order food and you get the wrong thing, or, someone's yelling at you because they're trying to communicate and you just can't understand them, and it's a little jarring.
Right. I thought it was funny, too. Some just go unresolved, right? The one woman at this grocery store thought that somebody was complimenting her handbag, and she went through a quick summary of how she acquired it because it was kind of funny, and then there was no response from, I think, the cashier, and she thought, oh, well, yeah. Just left the store.
It was like, wait, she just kind of looked at her, and she's like, I don't know if the one actually complimented my handbag, or maybe she did, but she didn't understand my response. She's like, it was so awkward. She just walked away, and she's just like, I don't want to go back to that store.
We're speaking with Sarah Needleman, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is about misunderstandings between people because they're wearing masks. A lot of this, I guess, I think as you pointed out in the story, we're used to reading somebody's lips or expressions through their eyes or eyebrows, so it's tough right now.
Yeah, and you could say we've taken that for granted, but we certainly didn't expect to be in this situation. But about half the average person's ability to read does come from observing the mouth, nose, and chin, and so you don't really realize it, but you make a lot of you say a lot through the way your mouth moves or if you, you know, crinkle your nose, and people do read lips a lot, whether it's conscious or not. And so when you take that away, you're left with the eyes. And the eyes do say a lot, but you really need the whole shebang to usually understand what people are saying.
So what do you do then? I mean, simply enough, you can just pull away your mask, I guess, but that would make some people uncomfortable if you're really close.
Right.
So what do you do?
Right. You certainly would have to be at least 6 feet away to remove the mask if you needed to. Otherwise, you just got to really use your arm gestures, your eyebrows, accentuate your vocal tone, you know, go a little bit out of the way to make it clear what you're saying, emphasize certain words, you know, use that body language. And that's, you know, it takes a little time. It's going to take some practice, but you know, that may be what we need to do if we're going to be wearing masks when we have to go into stores or talking to people we don't know who are too close by.
Hey, Sarah Needleman, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Glad you're with us. It's Father's Day weekend, of course. Here are some famous quotes by dads compiled by womansday.com. One from actor Greg Kinnear. Sometimes I am amazed that my wife and I created two human beings from scratch, yet struggle to assemble the most basic of cabinets from IKEA. Number two from actor and comedian Ray Romano, who said, having children is like living in a frat house. Nobody sleeps, everything's broken, and there's a lot of throwing up. Number three from comedian Chris Rock, who said, nobody appreciates daddy. Nobody ever says, hey, daddy, thanks for knocking out this rent. Or, hey, daddy, it's easy to read with all this light. From comedian Steve Martin, who said, a father carries pictures where his money used to be. From late night TV host Conan O'Brien, who said, buying your kid a goldfish is a great way to teach them about responsibility for 24 to 36 hours. And from TV newsman Tim Russert, who said, the older I get, the smarter my father seems to get. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.